Welcome to Life Sciences and Science Life, a science podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional and Sports Sciences.
Our team of PhD candidates, along with various experts in the field, talk about current advances in sciences while exploring the challenges and triumphs of PhD life.
Welcome to today's episode. We are your host Hari,
and this is Ranjit.
And then today a new special guest, our editor, who's been working in the back end for a long time. Welcome Anar as well.
Hi everybody, nice to be on the podcast finally.
Let me introduce about myself. I'm Hari and I'm doing my PhD in pharmacology and toxicology, and my research is based upon molecular neuroscience. And then the PhD research project of mine is about blood-brain barrier, aging, and diet metabolites such as short-chain fatty acids, how it's work, or how it can prevent with the blood-brain barrier senescence. So this is my research topic. What about you, Ranjit?
I finished my PhD in 2023. And my topic was to develop a microfluidic device which could address a problem of processing low input samples, particularly concerning microorganisms for proteomic and nucleic acid sequencing. So basically, I developed this microfluidic device which is automated for sample processing. And it can help in the extraction of nucleic acids and proteins from microorganisms that can subsequently be studied. This is about my PhD. And then I moved to Vienna to do my postdoctoral research, where I focused on building workflows to study gut microbiome and the associated functional pathways. Through proteomics.
Nice. Super interesting. So we are, I think, all related in some way, because I'm also doing diet-induced cognitive function, how diet affects cognition and so on. So for that, I'm first off analyzing effect of alcohol and fructose, which is just commonly found in modern life. But for that purpose, I'm using C. elegans. It's a small microscopic worm. And then with that model, you can really capture cognitive function which cannot be captured in vitro. So yeah, I'm just trying to develop methods, validate already established methods and so on, and how it can be used for our purposes. Yep.
So that's about our research work, and I think we will share more about our day-to-day work and how our PhD was shaped and what kind of experiences we are having. So that's about this episode. And to begin with, the first question that I have prepared is to ask to the guys how a typical day in the lab is for them.
Well, that's a nice question, but also what I like about the PhD experience so far is that you don't have a routine day. Every day is different. So some day you are buried under experiments. Some day you have nothing to do except reading and writing. So it really depends on what you got going on at that moment. That's probably what I like. But yeah, as I said, I'm working with live organisms, so day-to-day maintenance should be always be in place. So you're checking up on them so that everything is going well. It's like that.
Cool. My PhD day usually starts quite early. So every day I need to make new batches of microfluidic devices. So I fabricate them in a clean room. And then I start my protocol, which is quite set and it's established. It took me 2 weeks to 3 weeks to set up the protocol, but once it was done, then it's just playing with the mouse. And so I start that, and it's about 6 hours, during which I have nothing to do. So basically, I just go enjoy the city, go to a museum. I just catch up on reading and updating my lab work. And then once the protocol is completed, I take the collected peptides, and then I load them to the HPLC for separation and subsequent analysis in the mass spectrometer. So yeah, on an average day, I work for about 2 to 3 hours, and the rest of the day is just for something spontaneous. So, yeah, that was my PhD. And that's one important thing that I need to mention, that I did my PhD through COVID. So there was not a lot of things to do. Yeah. So yeah, that was a little sad part, but yeah.
Interesting, guys. Like for me, I would start a day with a coffee as usual. And yeah, lot of manuscript readings and about the current research. I have a habit to read an article every day, even though, like, for sure, one article per day, because I'm a bit bad with my writing. So I'll just start reading and start writing. And then I'm managing in both ways. Like, I'm doing in silico and in vitro. So it's pretty... pretty compact situation for me, but still I've been out of in vitro for some time now, because I'm fully focused on the in silico studies, like especially on molecular docking, so that I don't want to waste a laborious time and then take some computational time to get the targets what I want, and then I move to the part that is a bit difficult that you need more time. So usually, my day is a bit of balanced, but it is mandatory reading. So, yeah.
So cool. And which one do you find more fun or rewarding? The in vitro part, in silico part? Because they have both their ups and downs, or let's say pros and cons. Or
yes. I would say in silico part, as a desk job, you know, you have... privilege to work also from your home or wherever you want. But some kind of in vitro stuffs, you really need a lot of time to spend there, and you need a lot of like, you need to look the stuffs every day to be keep alive of your cells without any contamination, you know. That's a bad, not a bad part, but it's a kind of stuff you need to look after always. But in computational part, you will generate a lot of data, but sometimes that data doesn't make you sense, and you will redo the things once again. But I would say both has their pros and cons, but I'm enjoying both.
Nice. I was wondering, like, was there a specific point in time that made you decide to do a PhD, or was it a thing in the back of your head for a long time?
I can answer this one. For me, it was when I was 12 years old, I think. Wow. Yeah, I was in my high school. No, maybe in my middle school. So what happened was, in my school, there weren't many people who had the title doctor. So I was only two people who had doctor. And I was curious why they are called doctors when they are not real doctors. So then I was wondering, okay, how did these guys get doctor, but rest of us don't have a doctor? Then I got the answer that it's because they have done their PhD and then they were awarded the title of doctor. Then I was thinking to myself, okay, someday I need to also get this this title. So that's how it started. So this was when I was very young. And of course, when you grow old, things change. And then it was the curiosity for science and you know, to understand how things work. And more importantly, I started as an engineer. So for me, it's always the challenge of simplifying things. So if there's a complex problem, how can you make it simplified and how it can be easily, you know, used by a larger community of people. So that's why I started doing research, and most of my research were based on method development and simplification of complex things and automation and stuff like that. Yeah. So this is how I ended up doing my PhD. And yeah, and it was more of a training and a lot of skills that were developed. Yeah.
I maybe I have an answer why I want to do a PhD. I would say I don't have idea to start a PhD until my master degree, because I'm a pharmacist, so my way of job is like prescribe go and give the medicine to a patients by seeing the prescription. And then there is another part of, apart from the pharmacy, is research, that many people don't want to go in the people who are a pharmacist. But yeah, I find it that interesting to go something beyond the prescription. So I just started as a master degree as a research one. So when I'm into it, it was so good that you are learning novel things that coming up every day, new therapeutics and everything, which is so well advanced. And you are learning about that very quick often, like very quicker, you know about that, the process, and the new things are coming up daily and daily. So that makes curiosity. So that curiosity develops me, and then I ended up in PhD now.
Very cool.
In my case, I was on the fence of doing PhD or not during my master's a lot. But then during writing of my master's dissertation, I really liked the process of reading research or finding out new things that seemed interesting to me. So I was looking at different PhD postings and everything, and then this position really popped up and caught my attention. And then I decided to apply and ended up here, which I'm really grateful for. I didn't actually look for a PhD in and of itself, but I was just looking for interesting projects to get my hands dirty with, I guess. But yeah.
I must say that you're not the only one that I have heard that they decided to do a PhD during their writing process.
Really?
I think the writing process just makes everyone want to do a PhD. Because, you know, when you're doing experiments and you're in the lab, you just focus on that one particular experiment, mm-hmm. and you don't see the whole picture, you know. You break it down, and then most of the time it's not what you want, and then you're just trying to troubleshoot and everything. But when you write, you see the big picture,
yeah, exactly.
and you read what other people have done. Uh-huh. And then it just makes you feel like you have achieved something that nobody has ever done.
Yeah.
So then you want to have that rush, you know, that dopamine again and again and again, and then you know, you end up doing a PhD.
Yeah, like when you do something that has nobody ever showed before, that's really a surreal feeling. Like at that point in time, briefly, before your groupmates or your supervisor, you were the only person in the world who knows that stuff.
Yeah. Maybe, guys, I have an interesting question for you people. How did you stay motivated when you think your progress was slow or your experiments keep failing?
Yeah, not at all interesting. But maybe I can start with this, because I had a lot of rough patches during my PhD, because in the second month of my PhD, I had a collaborator not willing to support the project anymore. And then 1 month later, we had the outbreak of COVID. So we were asked to not come to lab and, you know, take precautions. So there was a lot of things at the initial stages, and of course there's also failures in the experiments, and things didn't go the way that I wanted to do. During these times, the most important thing that I did was to always seek for help. So I was fortunate to have a very good team, as well as I had people outside my lab to whom I could always connect. So the most important ones were my childhood friends from school. So we used to talk every week. So it was not about science. It was just talking, because at that time, not talking would make me go, phew. But talking random things and just, you know, it was nice to look forward to something. So always, so my way of dealing with failures or setbacks during research was to move away from the research and focus on other things that are also important in life. So I learned to cook at that time. I even did a bartender course, and then I learned to make fancy cocktails. And so, you know, life must go on. That's what I always kept telling myself, you know. And then eventually, there will be a time when things go your way and then the experiments will work tremendously well. And when that happens, forget all the other things, forget life, forget sleep, come back to research and do everything. So this is what I did during my PhD. So when things went well, I worked 12, 14 hours. I even stayed overnight in the lab or kept myself awake and writing, reading and everything. So it was not like, okay, 8 hours of work and then 4 hours of hanging out with friends and then sleep. No, it was like 2-3, maybe 1.5 years of doing no research and then 6 months of doing all the research and getting through it. And I must say it worked for me, and I was able to even publish my research in a couple of reputed journals. So it worked.
Nice.
So for me, what I stay motivated because you need to keep going. That's the only thing when you decide to do a PhD. So every day is new for me. So if I don't have something today, I will try in a different way in the next day. It might work, but if it is not working, I would go for a other thing that I can do, like some other projects that I'm doing on. So when I'm focused on the different perspective, then after I come back here, that I notice something that I made it wrong or something goes not in my way. But when I find it out, like I'm just doing different things in different times to stay motivated and also not to also get burden of not doing the things like night procrastinated at the later stage. It's pretty hard for me. So I would say I would focus on two different things and then I come back to the things that might work later. So This is how I keep motivated. Of course, apart from that, I'm doing a lot of sports as well, which keep me going every day, especially cricket. And then also some weight trainings nowadays.
Nice.
What about you?
For me, it was all of the above. But also, I'm drawing a lot of inspiration from our previous episode guests, Daniel and Marietta. For instance, Marietta's take on null results was really interesting because she is proposing many different sub-hypotheses so that when you are carrying out many different measurements or projects simultaneously, some of them are bound to fail, but some of them, you're increasing your chance of having a successful thing going on. So I just realized it now that I have like sub projects going on at the same time. And well, all of them can go wrong, but with like some reasonable time constraints or some in a relaxed manner, if you have several things going on, one of them might work and it's not the end of the world in a way. Mm-hmm. But even if all of it fails, I think taking a step back, having some your own time doing sports really helps you stay motivated. And then Daniel's take on your privilege to be here doing this work, you're basically privileged to fail over and over and over again without major consequences, as if you're a pilot or something. So that's quite nice.
Like,
what's a skill you learned in your PhD that you didn't expect to?
Yeah, I would say the networking skills and communication, which I think I'm doing better nowadays after started my PhD. Like I can see the difference previous of my communication skills and current communication skills, and also the networking skills, which I am becoming more active nowadays to connect with people during conferences or even through LinkedIn, many other softwares, applications through. And and I remember that my professor Dr. Marietta Sille told that you need to find new people in each conference or wherever you are going, because you will get potentially your future collaborator there, or future postdoc PA, or whatever the potential option you are looking for. So networking makes you like not only a connection for you to just talk, but it also defines your career path at some times. So I think that's the skill I think I learned during this time.
Nice. It's really noticeable because you're the one who is organizing this podcast and talking to everybody and getting things moving. So I think it really helped.
It's going good, actually. This is what the communication and the networking skills like. For a typical example, we are doing podcast now. So yeah.
For me, like I said, it was bartending, which was unexpected. Yeah. So I never expected to learn bartending in my PhD. Yeah. That was one. But the most important thing for me was to learn to, when I did my PhD, I moved for the first time from my home country to France. And it was very different. Things were different. The language was different. And mostly French was the widely spoken language. And it was initial days were very difficult to make friends and to even buy bread from the bakery. So the process of learning new language, the process of meeting new people and, understanding their thought process, their culture and all the other things made me widen my understanding. My perspectives were widened and it led me to a personal development. So this reflected in every other aspect of my life. So it gave me new perspectives and this international mobility and international exposure changed a lot in me. And so this is very unexpected. Well, it was evident, but it was unexpected. Mm-hmm. Says a lot about the experience. This is the growth I had during my PhD. So this was very, very important for me. Something I picked up. I was lucky to have, and yeah.
What do you wish that other people understand about doing a PhD? It's a really interesting question. I can start first. I would say when I start telling that people that I'm doing a PhD, people right away just ask me that, are you a PhD student? What you are doing for your work? And then I will tell them, I'm sorry, but PhD is not only a study, but something you need to put effort and all your works to earn it. And you are paid for it. So people will understand me in a way that PhD is a work that you need to do.
Yeah. Nice. And also there are some different roles you play, right?
Yeah.
You can be a teacher if you have some teaching duties, and also you're a researcher, student, employee, office worker, writer. It's all sort of stuff that you have to do during your PhD. So
yeah,
it would be nice if everybody knew it.
Yeah, multitasking.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to add, Ranjit?
Yeah, for me, one important thing that I wish people could understand about research and PhD is that the process and the outcome is going to take a lot of time. So when you embark on a research topic, it's often expected that within a few years, you will have amazing results that could go on to change the world. You will get a Nobel Prize, for example, in a few years. And I have had people asking me, oh, so you started your PhD, soon you're going to get a Nobel Prize. I was like, no. That's not how it works, It's a very long process. One fine example is the case during COVID, when everybody wanted to do COVID research and everybody wanted to find a vaccine, find a therapy for the pandemic. And you see what it has led us to. We were successful in developing vaccines, but we also had problems with the vaccines. There are some adverse effects reported on these vaccines because the actual vaccine process takes years, like it takes at least a decade to successfully come out. But in case of COVID, we had a severe situation where we had to come up with something really fast, and all the resources were put into that, and yet at some places we couldn't manage. So all I try to say is that people need to understand that research is a long process, and everybody needs to dedicate time and do experiments, do it repeatedly, do it several times, do it in different labs, and then we come up with something that could really change the life, like, you know, change the field, the science. So it's important that people who start their PhD, as well as people who are not doing a PhD, who are, you know, involved with someone doing a PhD, understands that it's a long process, and the process needs to take its own time and its own course. The most important thing is keep doing it, like day in, day out, you keep doing it, you make progress. As long as you're progressing, you are in the right direction, because often things that are delayed are misunderstood, that it's denied or it's never done in a good way. No, as long as you're doing it day by day, you understand the system, it's good, and this is something that I would advise. It's not an advice, but I would ask from people to know about research and PhD in general, since PhD is the first point of actual research career.
Ranjit, what's your final piece of advice, like whatever you want to share?
So I would like to end with a quote from Albert Kiyogi, which goes like, "Discovery consists of seeing what everybody has seen and thinking what nobody has thought." So this has been my mantra during my PhD. So till today, I follow this because I strive to see the results of the observations that have been commonly observed in the field. But I try to think out of the box. So as I was saying, I try to solve problems. It's very important that you see the problem. So the first step is to see the problem and see it how everybody is seeing it, and then try to find a solution out of the box.
What I can tell is, be relaxed on what you are doing. Just don't procrastinate too much, because I do as well sometimes. Sometimes it can lead to burnout. So do the things, enjoy the process, take a moment for yourself and think about you. That's what I can tell.
It's very nice to finally sit down with you guys and talk about our experiences doing our PhD, or hearing Ranjit's thoughts on his previous experiences and so on. And yeah, it was really nice so far, and looking forward to speaking with more intriguing guests and then sharing with you guys.
Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's it for this episode of Life Sciences and Science Life. We are your hosts, Ranjit and
Hari.
Tune in next month for more intriguing science topics, relatable PhD experiences, and expert contributions on how to navigate a career path of a young scientist.
This is a podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional, and Sports Sciences. Don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn. Thank you for listening. See you next time.